Good morning. You are listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of accessible community news and information. We're located in Lowell, Massachusetts. We read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. Lab Radio is brought to you by volunteers and the staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. Lab would also like to thank the Nancy L. and Richard K. Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support. This morning, I'll be reading several articles from the Andover Townsman, the week of July 16th to the 22nd. North Andover News. Winery withdraws proposed parking charges. From North Andover. A local boutique winery plan to expand its parking is on hold amid growing concerns from its neighbors about the farm's intentions to host larger events. An application for a limited site plan review modifications to change the approved parking plan at Marble Ridge Farm to increase the number of parking spaces from 65 to 60. It was withdrawn without prejudice at the planning board's meeting. Marble Ridge Farm at 11 Marble Ridge Road is a residential zoning district and includes a winery with a tasting room and lodging options. William DiAdamo, an attorney for Marble Ridge, made the move after first looking to continue the public hearing by a month and after a community member voiced their concerns with the proposal. The withdrawal allows the winery to apply again when it's ready as a continuance on the initial application. Marble Ridge Winery and the Marble Ridge Farm owner, Eldridge Bridge Leland, submitted the modification after its discussion at the October 2025 and March 26 planning board meetings. The updated plan would expand the existing field parking area to 60 places. The update improves site operations, circulation, and on-site parking management needed to support our approved farm operations, including production and sales through our tasting room, private events, and overnight stays, Leland wrote in a June 1st letter to the planning board. Some abutters sought legal counsel in attorney Nick Rosenberg, who told the board how there is an issue with parking among other concerns of neighboring homeowners. He said to extend the winery's parking requires the extension is primarily used for use of accessories to the winery's agricultural use and invokes Dover considerations. Rosenberg said there have been violations on the winery's property and an underlying concern that the winery is really an event venue masquerading as a vineyard. He also outlined the neighborhood's opposition in a letter July 6 to the planning board. Having a small stand of a few great plants does not mean you get then to do whatever you want to do on the property, Rosenberg said, alleging their grapes aren't used in any significant amount of their own wine. The accessory uses under the Dover Amendment have to support the farm's primary agricultural use, he noted. Weddings, their rehearsals, and an ongoing concert series that has occurred on the property, along with lodging, are extensions way beyond anything to support the agricultural use, he said. The board did not make a decision on the parking application, with it being withdrawn, but Rosenberg asked the board to encourage the building committee commissioner to monitor the property to make sure its use for agriculture in compliance with its 35 parking spaces and uses allowed under the initial site plan review. He highlighted recent zoning violations and encouraged the building commissioner to determine if the winery is engaged in wine-making activities. Neighbors reportedly approached Lennon about concerns, but he has not responded back about food trucks wedding, concerts, loud music, and traffic on the private way. Rosenberg said, as events expand and traffic increases, it will become a problem for neighbors. He also noted how the winery went before the planning board in the fall to plant more vines, and now the same area is proposed for more parking. This is an event venue, he said. This is a wedding and a concert venue. This is an Airbnb space, not a vineyard. Great Pond resident Nicole Friels lives across from the winery in its parking area. She said she was dismayed that Leland and the winery have been able to circumvent local laws when it took her 18 months to renovate her house due to different town restrictions. Neighbors approached Leland a few weeks ago about a parking application and gave him ample time to respond, but sought legal advice after not hearing back. Friels expressed how she was initially supportive of Leland and the business venture and was excited about the idea of a quaint winery across the street from her home. At the time, we did not realize that his aspirations were much larger. The select board approved the entertainment license for Marble Ridge Farm on January 26. Leland has also requested to change the business hours to be open from 11 to 9 on weeknights and 11 to 10 p.m. on weekends and holidays. He sought the entertainment license for the approval areas that they are allowed to sell alcohol. Leland told the select board in January that he envisioned most of the entertainment inside their tasting room and some outside during nice weather. Another resident, Nancy Leland, was concerned about the winery's advertising "Bring Your Own Booze" at private events and major parking violations in May. Planning Board Chair Sean Kevnig highlighted an enforcement order on Marble Ridge because of the zoning violations early in the meeting. From Andover, board to review conditions for proposed Old River Road mixed-use development. A proposed 426-unit mixed-use development at 100 Old River Road will have its order of conditions reviewed, and that was going to be on July 14. The planning board is expected to discuss the proposed conditions for the site plan and special permits for the proposed mixed-use structure at 100 Old River Road during the meeting. The project, known as the Commons at River Road, was proposed by developer JMC SVP Old River Road, who owns the property. It includes no more than 426 housing units and 6,550 square feet of retail space. The development would have 638 parking spaces combined from an open-air parking garage and surface parking. Some of the spots would be shared with varying parking demands throughout the day by commercial and residential users. A five-story, 497-square-foot residential building with retail space is proposed to take the place of an existing structure on the site. The developer considers the mixed-use development as beneficial, according to the supplemental special permit narrative in the application. The project initially has 3,000 square foot of commercial space and 432 housing units by special permit. The planning board had a peer review done to analyze the feasibility of commercial and retail space on the development of ground floor. The peer review concluded that the ground floor could accommodate up to 6,000 square feet for a mix of retail, a restaurant or cafe, and medical spaces. Project consultant Anne Earhart of Pittsfield-based Everett Street LLC worked in collaboration with the town's consultant. General conditions detail the scope of the detail and how modifications to any plan need to be submitted, reviewed, and approved by the planning board. Other conditions are related to construction before, during, and after it is completed, such as the pre-construction meeting, stormwater pollution prevention plan, and assigned stormwater operation and maintenance plan. All on-site parking, access driveways, pavement markings, and sidewalks need to be completed prior to occupancy for each phase of construction. The town also submitted a $5 million grant request through the Community One Stop Program to improve the River Road Coordinator. From Ask Joan, keep cool when the heat wave hits. Question, with all the hot weather we've been having this summer, I keep seeing warnings on the news about checking on elderly neighbors. I do have some older folks in my neighborhood. What should I be watching for in a heat wave? Answer, we've certainly seen some hot days so far this summer. Your instinct to check on your older neighbors is a good one. Extreme weather can be dangerous for all of us, but especially so for older adults. As we age, it can be more difficult for our bodies to adjust to certain temperature changes. Older adults are also more likely to be taking medications that affect the body's response to temperature, or to have medical conditions that make it difficult to regulate their temperature. That combination can make hot days riskier than they'd be for the rest of us. On hot days, a little prevention can go a long way. Health experts suggest checking on older family members or neighbors twice a day during heat waves. If you're planning on stopping by, here are a few things worth asking. What's the indoor and outdoor temperature? An older adult may be less likely to notice and respond to changes in temperature. Are they drinking enough? It's important to stay hydrated when the weather heats up. Older adults take water pills or limit their water intake for medical reasons and should check with their doctors on how much water they should be drinking. Do they have access to air conditioning and or a cool location? Many older adults on fixed income either don't have air conditioning or don't want to use it to save money. Encourage them to turn it on or move to a cooler spot. Do they know where to go if their home is too hot and do not have transportation to a cool location? During the recent heat, many towns in the Merrimack Valley and North Shore have opened cooling centers, libraries, malls, or a family member home that also can be a cooling option. How are they feeling? Do they show any sign of heat stress or heat-related illness? Watch for dizziness, nausea, heavy sweating, or weakness, which are signs of heat exhaustion. If you notice a lack of sweating, skin that's hot or dry, or a rapid pulse that could mean a heat stroke, call 911 right away. Do they have electricity, or is there a power outage? If the power goes out, that could affect medical equipment or medications. Being aware of the older adults in your neighborhood and taking the time to check on them on hot days can go a long way toward keeping them healthy and safe. You'll be making a difference. Are you caring for an older adult or need help finding healthy, edgy resources? The experienced staff at AgeSpan can help. You can reach AgeSpan at 800-892-0890. Again, that number at AgeSpan, 800-892-0890. A letter to the editor. Protect Andover Wildlife remains true to mission. To the editor. Last April, Andover Town Meeting voted to approve a home rule petition seeking to restrict the use of anticoagulants rodenticides in our town. Since then, the petition has been filed with the state and a hearing was held on July 1st before a Joint Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for Andover and six other towns with similar petitions. Four Andover residents attended the hearing and spoke in support of our petition. Andover was the only town represented by members of its local government, beginning with Ellen Townsend, Chair, Mindy Chave, and Prue Barker. I was proud of the message Andover delivered. We are ready to craft a bylaw, work with Health Division, educate the public, and move this initiative forward if approved. We also make clear that a statewide law remains the best long-term solution. Still, Andover is ready and eager to take the next step in reducing the harm caused by anticoagulant rodenticides. The committee must act on seven petitions heard by the end of July in order for them to proceed. Without approval, the petitions will need to be refiled in the next legislative session. Protect Andover Wildlife remains committed to this effort until meaningful progress is made to reduce the use of anticoagulants rodenticides across the Commonwealth. We hope to share good news this summer. And this was written by Donna Cooper from the Protect Andover Wildlife. All those years ago, 100 years ago on July 16, 1926, at 4 o'clock this morning, the violent explosion of a hot water tank wrecked the home of Alan G. McKinnon at 76 Haverhill Street in Shawshene Village. Mr. McKinnon and his wife and their 2-year-old son Robert were asleep in the second story when the explosion occurred. The force of the explosion sent the tank hurling through the floor of the second story, narrowly missing the child who lay asleep. Barnard Street has been made a one-way street entering from Main Street and the short alley running between Barnard and Park Streets behind the town hall has also been made one-way entering from Barnard Street. This is a wise move on the part of the authorities and should do much to remedy the confusion and danger existing there before. 75 years ago, July 19, 1951, land values in certain areas of the town have recently been increased by the Board of Assessors, and this coming with a $4 jump in the tax rate from 36 to 40 has caused a decided increase in some of the tax bills just sent out. No charge has been made in the valuation of buildings. The land value this year has been increased in Johnson Street, Acres, Pine Street, Elm, and Summer Streets. Two new phantom boxes have been added to the list of Andover's fire alarm designation following two recent fire trucks on the bypass. The phantom box will give a clear designation of fires on the bypass. Andover's Red Cross Blood Program has two recent opportunities to serve the community in a very direct way, reports Victor J. Mill, Jr., chairman of the committee. 50 years ago, July 15, 1976, Town Manager Maynard Austin has been authorized to allow space in the theater building on Essex Street to the Mass State Employment Services for a sub-office. The agency will also use the Andover office for handling job application and not underemployment insurance. 25 years ago, July 19, 2001, 10 months into the Safety Center stalled progress, Town Manager Buzz Sabinski is making a change. Not without regard to who is doing the work for the town, but in how the public will receive information. Press relations will work through me, he said. I want to have some things coordinated from my seat to make sure we are giving out the proper information. Here's a picture of two kids with painted faces at the festival. Ryan Hashem, 7, and his sister Mariana of North Andover show off their painted faces that they got during the Essex Arts Center annual block party called Fiesta en la Calle, held on Island Street in Lawrence. The free Saturday event had artist booths selling their work, food trucks, a learn-to-paint area, gallery tours, and kids even learned to fly a kite. It featured demonstrations highlighting its educational programs in the Arts Center as well. You are listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Lab would like to thank UMass Lowell's WUML-FM for providing the radio signal that allows us to broadcast 5 days a week. Round Town. Temple Emmanuel hosts summer outing August 3rd. Mark the calendar for the Temple Emmanuel summer outing from 11:30 to 8 p.m. August 3rd at Indian Ridge Country Club on 73 Lovejoy Road in Andover. The event will feature golf tournaments, pickleball tournaments, mahjong, round robin, tennis, swimming, family fun, dinner, and a silent auction. Registration and lunch kick off at 11:30, followed by beginner pickleball and a shotgun start at 1 p.m. Tennis, pickleball, and the pool opens at 1 as well. The mahjong tournament will start at 3, while dinner reception and silent auction launch at 6:30. All are welcome to join the community for this festival. Folks coming for dinner only pay $80, while Golf Foursome pays $1,000, which includes lunch, dinner, a cart, driving range, and putting greens. Single golfers may also pay $250 to participate. From local news, Andover Townsman. State awards $5 million to expand early childhood mental health support. From Boston. The Healy Driscoll administration on Wednesday announced $5 million in grants to expand early childhood mental health consultation services for children, families, educators, and early education providers across Massachusetts. Through the Department of Early Education and Care, 5 regional organizations have been selected to provide early childhood mental health consultation services. The grant, which will benefit Andover and North Andover residents, among others, will help early education and care programs access specialized consultations, better support children's social-emotional development, promote school readiness, strengthen classroom environments, and connect families with additional services when needed according to the state. Grantees will work with programs to implement trauma-informed policies and practices, strengthen educators' ability to identify and respond to behavioral development and mental health needs, and implement evidence-based positive behavior support. They will also help programs build stronger participation with families through individualized behavior support plans, referrals to community-based services, and strategies that support children's success both in and out the classroom. Mental health challenges continue to affect children across Massachusetts, and these grants will help educators and families better support their mental health, improve learning, and connect young children with services that can make a lasting difference, said Governor Maura Healey. Mental health consultants work directly with educators, families, and early education programs to strengthen classroom environments and provide evidence-based strategies that support children's healthy development. Services include educator coaching, classroom observation, behavior support planning, and connections to community-based resources such as early intervention, special education, and behavioral health services when additional support is needed. Every child deserves the opportunity to learn and grow in an environment where they feel safe and supported, said Amy Kershaw, the Commissioner of Early Education and Care. These grants will strengthen the supports available to early educators and families across the Commonwealth, helping programs respond to children's social, emotional, and behavioral needs while creating inclusive classrooms where every child and their educators can thrive. One of the benefiting organizations, the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, will receive over $1 million. Cities and towns served by the MSPCC include Andover and North Andover. Together, these organizations will provide statewide coverage and partner with licensed early education and care programs, including family child care, group and school age programs, public preschool classrooms, and Head Start programs, according to the state. I will now read a few articles from Haverhill Life. This is from July 2026. On the front page is a beautiful picture. It says, "Continuing a tradition. Members of the Andover High School class of 2026 continue a longtime tradition by posing on Bradford Common and the steps of First Christ Church, Bradford, before attending their prom at the Castleton Banquet Conference Center." From Chamber Chatters, Haverhill Life. The Greater Haverhill Chamber of Commerce hosted its 110th annual dinner wine tasting on June 11th at the Haverhill Country Club to celebrate the best of our community. From a board director who embodies quiet dedication to a nonprofit breathing new life into the region, this year's honorees reflect the breadth of service that keeps Haverhill thriving. Speaker Kendall Berlin O'Connor, the CEO and president of MassBio, addressed attendees on entrepreneurship, professional growth, and the value of dedication and community. The evening was a fabulous celebration recognizing outstanding leaders and organizations making a difference throughout the greater Haverhill area. The Jerry Lowe Outstanding Director Award was given to Penelope Guerrero Laguerra and Penelope, and there's a picture of her. The winner is recognized for her commitment in doing anything at any time with a pleasant and positive attitude and always responding to the call of duty. And there's a picture here of community members as they gathered in celebration of the Greater Haverhill Chamber of Commerce Annual Award Dinner and Wine Tasting Event. Memories of Haverhill by Zib Durich, Haverhill Boxboard Company. While we're known as the Queen Shoe City, Haverhill had many other industries at the beginning of the 20th century that manufactured hats, woolens, and papers. In 1902, four men who had moved east from Indiana found the perfect site for their mill, 48 acres of land on the bank of the Merrimack River. The river would supply water necessary for a manufacture of paperboard. A mill was built at the end of South Kimball Street in Bradford, and a corporation called Haverhill Boxboard Company began operation in January 1903. Paperboard, or cardboard as most folks know it, is used to produce various products such as cereal boxes, cracker boxes, soda and beer cartons, shoe boxes, gift boxes, pizza boxes, and poster board. It is one of the most common packaging materials and has been around for quite some time. In 1920, the Haverhill Boxboard Company was purchased along with several others by Robert Gehr Company of New York in what was a major merger at that time. This consolidated an organization that became a leader in the production and distribution of paperboard and paper goods, with mills stretching across the eastern U.S. and Canada. Robert Gehr was a pioneer in the paper goods industry who had made his fortune by inventing the process of cutting and creasing paperboard cartons in a single operation. He also developed corrugated cardboard. acquired by Continental Can Company in 1956 and subsequently sold to a division of Newark Box Board in 1971, the mill operated as Haverhill Paperboard Corporation. Despite the corporate change over the years, the mill was and still is referred to as the Boxboard by longtime Haverhill residents. By the mid-1960s, there was a national interest in conservation and recycling, and the boxboards became the poster child for turning tons of waste paper into usable products, even though it had been doing so since its inception. Unfortunately, by the late 60s, the recycling hero fell from grace because it used Merrimack River water in its production process and returned the wastewater to the river, which now had a reputation as one of the most polluted rivers in the country. Scheduled to be closed, the plant was purchased in 71 by Newark Boxboard, which invested several million dollars to modernize the operation and bring the mill into complete environmental compliance. Newark Boxboard continued to operate until it closed in 2008. Rising energy costs were blamed for closing the mill, which had employed generations of Merrimack Valley families over the years. Factory officials indicate that the skyrocketing cost of natural gas and electricity needed to run the mill machinery properly decided to close. At its peak, Boxboard employed some 200 people and operated 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, producing more than 600,000 tons of paperboard a day on two paper machines that were each longer than a football field. As part of the manufacturing process, the plant took in about six million pounds of recyclable paper goods annually from neighboring cities and town from Haverhill. The boxboard was demolished in 2012 after having been purchased by a developer who had plans for a mixed-use project of housing and businesses to be placed in 2013. Those plans apparently fell through, and although other developers have shown interest in the 23-acre site of the factory, plus an additional 36 acres owned by the property company, are still vacant. If you're a baby boomer who grew up in Haverhill, you probably remember hearing the mill's steam whistle sounding in the morning at the start of the workday, at noon break, and at late afternoon quitting time. The whistle could be heard throughout the city, and it would start slowly and build to a crescendo as the steam pressure increased. You could set your clocks by it, and the kids in my neighborhood knew that when it sounded in the late afternoon, playtime was over, and it was time to go home for supper. And who can forget the numerous paper drives by various organizations to raise money? One of those paper drives cost me my entire collection of Superman, Superboy, and Batman comic books. I had collected every consecutive issue of those comic books during the 50s, but my mother decided that they were taking up too much room in my closet and that they would help with the church fundraiser. Besides, she said, you're going to be starting high school, and you are too old to be reading comic books. Had we only known. Community Roots by Dustin McElver. The Beauty and Versatility of Hydrangeas. Hydrangeas are among the most beloved flower shrubs in home gardens, prized for their large, colorful blooms and long season of interest. From soft blues and pinks to brilliant whites and deep purples, these versatile plants bring color and elegance to landscapes throughout the summer months. In New England, few plants are as closely associated with the landscape as hydrangeas, whose abundant blooms have become a hallmark of summer gardens, from coastal cottages to suburban backyards. While many people think of hydrangeas as a single type of plant, there are several distinct species commonly grown in gardens. The most popular include big leaf hydrangeas, known for their blue and pink mop heads, or lace cap blossoms. Pinnacle hydrangeas, which produce large cone-shaped flowers, including the popular Annabelle variety. Oak leaf hydrangeas, valued for the distinctive foliage and four-season interest, and climbing hydrangeas, which can cover walls, fences, trellises with beautiful white flowers. Each type offers its own unique characteristic, making hydrangea a versatile choice for nearly any garden setting. The Patriotic Bike Parade complemented fireworks in Haverhill celebration. The city of Haverhill kicked off a month of 250 anniversary celebrations with its annual fireworks on July 3rd, followed by an inaugural family-friendly bike parade on the following day, July 4th, with a 10 o'clock check-in. Both events took place at the Riverside Park. Children were able to deck out their wheels for a contest, and additional July events included Daughters of the American Revolution commemorative program honoring James Brigham, the Haverhill Firefighter Museum, and also the Black Experience of the Revolution virtual talk, which was held on July 20th. And the Buttonwood Museum's 18th century gowns reproductions discussion on July 22nd at 10 a.m. Pick your own raspberries and blueberries at Turkey Hill Farm. They're located at 380 Middle Road in Haverhill, and their phone number is 978-372-9474. Blueberry season goes on until mid-August or later. Raspberry season ends in early August. Starting July 5th, they're open from 8 to 4, Tuesdays through Sundays. Plus, they stay open until dark on Wednesdays, and they provide containers for the pickers. Again, that number, Turkey Hill Farm, to pick your own blueberries and raspberries, 978-372-9474. From Haverhill News, Breakfast Exchange Club awards $1,500 to support Haverhill's Happy Ride program. The Breakfast Exchange Club of Greater Haverhill recently awarded $1,500 to the Haverhill Council on Aging to continue supporting the Happy Rides transportation program. Mary Conley, director of the COA, accepted the donation and will continue administering the program by distributing transportation vouchers at the Citizen Center in $25 increments while monitoring usage to ensure fair access for participants. Program information is regularly featured in the COA's newsletter, and vouchers are also mailed to older citizens who are unable to visit the center. According to Conley, participants frequently praise the program's flexibility. Unlike traditional transportation services that require advanced scheduling, Happy Rides allows older adults to make spontaneous trips for errands, social visits, library outings, nursing home visits, hair appointments, or even a simple treat like an ice cream cone. When asked to share a memorable example, Conley recalls a participant who used a voucher to attend Housing Court. That may not seem like a happy ride, she said, but it allowed her to get to court, avoid eviction, and remain in her home. That's definitely a happy ending. The club members are thrilled to see the program fulfilling its mission of reducing isolation and promoting social engagements among older adults, said Breakfast Exchange Club member Bonnie Sisson. Stories like these remind us that transportation is often the key to connect people to the services, relationships, and opportunities they need. To help expand the program's reach, the Breakfast Exchange Club has also submitted a proposal seeking matching funds that would increase the number of transportation vouchers available to older adults throughout the community. The Breakfast Exchange Club welcomes new members who share a passion for supporting older adults and strengthening the community. And there's a picture of several members of the Exchange Club as they present the check for $1,500 to the Haverhill Council on Aging for Happy Rides. Haverhill Garden Club seeks nomination for Garden of the Month. The Haverhill Garden Club is inviting residents to join to nominate outstanding local gardens for its 2026 Garden of the Month program. The program recognizes homeowners and gardeners who landscapes enhance the beauty of Haverhill through colorful flowers, creative planting, attractive designs, and well-maintained grounds. Gardens of all sizes and styles are eligible. Nominations are welcome from throughout the city, and residents are encouraged to nominate neighbors, friends, family members whose gardens deserve recognition. The award is only open to non-members of the Garden Club. Select gardens will be featured as the Garden of the Month during the summer's growing season and highlighted by the Haverhill Garden Club. To submit a nomination, send a homeowner's name and address along with your own contact information. The Haverhill Garden Club is dedicated to promoting gardening, civic beautification, environmental stewardship, and horticultural education throughout the greater Lawrence area. And the Haverhill Garden Club wins two statewide awards. The Haverhill Garden Club recently won two statewide awards from the Garden Club Federation of Massachusetts. The Edible Avenue at Riverside Park won the Civic Project Award, and the club's yearbook was judged tops among publication of large clubs, those with 70 to 90 members. The awards were among the State Federation annual meeting held on June 4th in Milford. The Garden Club Federation of Massachusetts includes 170 local clubs and more than 10,000 members. Haverhill Club members Ann Jacobson and Kathy McGrath-Fitz spearheaded development of the Edible Avenue in 2024. It's located in a corner of Riverside Park. The Edible Avenue is a walkway lined with trees, plants, and shrubs with edible plants. Among the many species are redbud, hickory, serviceberry, hazelnuts, blueberry, beach plum, wintergreen, and chokeberry. Whittier Tech students built two handicap-accessible raised beds featuring herbs and strawberries. Visitors can identify the plant location by referring to a large graphic map designed by club member Karen Boyd. The map includes photo links to websites providing comprehensive plant details. Boyd, owner of Karen B. Designs, also created the club's prize winning yearbook. A ribbon-cutting ceremony was held for the park in October of 2025. Dining in the Valley by Jimmy Carboni. What do you order at a newly opened restaurant? Make the right choice and you'll find yourself coming back again and again. With my wife, Pixie, and I first started dating in New York City, she often describes certain restaurants as places she tried once, but not twice. On the Corner Grill is not one of those places. At the Friends and Family soft opening of OTC Grill's newest location at Harbor Place in Haverhill, it became clear to me that this restaurant has the kind of appeal that keeps people returning. The Irish might call it more-ish Italian, and they might call it Abbondanza. Pixie and I were among the lucky guests invited to the preview. The evening celebrated more than just a restaurant opening. It marked another milestone in the continuing transformation of downtown Haverhill's waterfront. What makes their opportunity special and meaningful is that it marks years of persistence, partnership, and shared commitment among the property owners, the City of Haverhill, Pentucket Bay, local contractors, and many others who believe in this space's potential, said Allison Kublinski, executive founder of the Greater Haverhill Foundation. Seeing the restaurant filled with activity and excitement is a reminder what can happen when a community works together. We are proud to welcome OTC and even more excited about what it means to be continued growth and momentum of downtown Haverhill. I first visited Harbor Place in 2011 when the former Woolworth building sat abandoned. Its redevelopment several years later helped spark the revival on Merrimack Street and the downtown waterfront. Today, Harbor Place continues to evolve as a destination, and OTC Grill feels like a natural addition. The restaurant joins Barrio Nacos on the riverfront, creating a lively dining corridor with outdoor seating and sweeping views of the Merrimack River. The boardwalk remains one of Haverhill's hidden gems, in addition to OTC Grill strengthening the city's growing outdoor dining space. What stands out immediately about the OTC Grill is the energy. Despite being only days from opening, OTC Grill already feels established. The dining room buzzed throughout the evening, and the staff appeared polished and prepared. Employees trained exclusively and extensively at the restaurant's original location in Derry, New Hampshire, before the Haverhill opening. Owners George and Stephanie Chinko have expanded significantly from their original restaurant, which featured just 15 tables centered around a busy bar. The Harbor Place location is considered larger and expanding seating and a much larger staff. Manager Janelle White noted that the restaurant is committed to offering fresh ingredients made to order cooking. When it comes to the food and quality, it speaks for itself. Everything is made to order. The sauces, everything is made fresh. The commitment is evident through the menu. The standout dish of the evening was risotto, which George Chianto described as the cornerstone of the restaurant's success. Everything with risotto, he said with a laugh. In the early days, I put it on the menu and it turned out to be a bestseller. Thank you for listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Audio Information Network. There are many ways to listen to Lab Radio. You can request a free specialized radio receiver, or for more information about our radio reading service, call us at 978-454-5704. Our number here at Lab is 978-454-5704. And you can listen to Lab Radio anytime by dialing 1-631-359-9069. Listen to us anytime by dialing 1-631-359-9069. And you can visit our website where you can tune into Lab Radio at LowellAssociationForTheBlind.org. That's all one word, LowellAssociationForTheBlind.org. Thanks for listening.